Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com.
Okay, so welcome to Azure Podcast number 57. My name is Evan Basilik, and I'm here with one of my two colleagues, Kale Teeter. Kale, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Kale. I'm in the New York region working with a consulting group in the Azure PaaS COE, Platform as a Service COE, focusing mostly on Azure development type projects and other development projects.
Yeah, and I got so excited about getting to the intro because Sujit's not here. I forgot to say it. And like I said, my name is Evan, and I work in Azure support, supporting Azure IaaS, so Windows on Azure plus Azure networking. You know, I get excited, you know. But yeah, as we mentioned, you know, Sujit is doing family holiday stuff tonight, so he's tied up. But Kale and I thought we would try and do this. Sujit said this will end up being this week's session, so we are recording a little bit early because we're trying to get ahead of the holidays, because we have dedicated masses of listeners, right, who can't miss a single Wednesday. but we probably won't be around on those Wednesdays to record. So, we thought we'd talk about today both kind of storage all up. So there's two topics. The first one is we want to talk about premium storage some more. We touched on it briefly last week, but as there's more content and more information coming out, we thought we'd come back and hit it. And then also wanted to talk briefly about the storage API changes that I guess we've announced them for a while, but we're getting closer to when changes are actually going to happen. Let's start talking about premium storage. So premium storage is the high IOPS version of our Azure standard Azure storage, and this was we had a private preview for a while. We had a public preview that rolled out, I guess, one day last week, maybe the following week. You can read about it on Scott Goo's blog. We'll put a link to that in the show post. But basically, this is extremely high IOPS. We're talking on the order of, what was the quote, 5,000 IOPS per disk for some of our high-end ones. I don't know about you, Kale, but I mean, that is literally an order of magnitude over what we get today.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Azure storage.
Yeah, definitely for workloads like, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, but stuff like SQL and SharePoint and things where there's a lot of I/O. This would be great storage for back in those VMs.
Yeah, I think the thing that caught my attention from it when I was looking at it is, because I'm still kind of the mind that the percentage of people that really need the IOPS versus the number of people that, think they need it or they're just not really tuning their database. And again, I'm a little bit jaded being an ex-database guy. I just know that, there's lots of tuning opportunities out there, but it certainly is easy for people to not tune them. Right. It's kind of easier to just throw it out there. And if you get enough IOPS, it'll work. But I think the biggest thing that caught my attention here was the simplification that it has the potential to bring. Right. Like today you're talking, storage spaces on top of, anywhere from, 4 to 16 disks to get your IOPS. Well, now you can do one. Right. Or I guess maybe you could do two, one for your, let's talk SQL, one for your, read and write workload, which is your database files, but then one that is probably focused on your writes for your transaction log stuff. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that alone is a pretty nice benefit of not having to manage your deal or think about configuring all those extra disks, right? And especially if people just aren't really super comfortable with managing that.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if and it's probably a crazy optimization, but is it possible to straddle it? So to say, if I have a SQL server and I want to run my transaction log in this really fast storage, and then my other stuff I just run in the standard stuff.
Yeah. So what was the comment about it? You can use either standard or premium with these D. I think it's D.
Yeah, I believe it's a DS. D series. Yeah.
Yeah. DS series. I'm sorry, is what we call them.
Okay. So
you can mix and match, but you can only do premium with DS.
I see.
Right. So, the thing that I don't really know is how that would end up impacting your pricing model, right? Because there's a significant chunk of your pricing that is driven by the series of VMs that you're in. So I'd have to sit down and do some math and say, well, if, you know, how much price savings do I get by just using the lower cost and the slower storage? And is that really sufficient for, you know, is it worth even really messing
around? Yeah.
You know, I mean, storage is pretty cheap in general.
Yeah.
For what you get. I mean, you're really paying for the CPU and everything else. So I'll do some math on that.
Does this affect the redundancy models at all? Like, can you still do all this stuff? Like, obviously, local redundant is something it can do, but what about, like, geo? Is it, you can still do that?
So it looks like you can still do the geo, but I don't think that's the default behavior.
The standard one is default to geo, and then you have to change it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd have to invite one of my colleagues on who's like a storage wonk, right? The guy just lives and breathes disks, or used to before we sucked them into Azure. But I don't know if that's something about like SSDs by nature, right? Maybe because we're pushing so many IOPS, we didn't want to, you know, have the default behavior be pushing all those IOPS across to a remote location.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's asynchronous, so maybe the fear is you'll end up getting further behind than you would normally, right? Because that's the thing that I know I've talked to some customers about where, you know, Azure Geo Replication is great because you can read stuff against it. But if your data is something that, like, you're super, super concerned about, like, consistency between VHDs or consistency between files, we don't guarantee that at an instantaneous timestamp. Right, it's just over time the two disks will converge to the same thing. So maybe with SSDs, because you can get, you know, so much further behind in a short time window, maybe just decided that wouldn't be the default, just so people have to be much more cognizant of it.
Cool.
The thing that catch my attention was this is really only targeted at IaaS VMs.
Right.
So the storage, the queues and the Azure tables and the Azure files. Are going to stick with Azure storage or standard storage, I guess we're calling it. Now, this is a question for you, Cale. I mean, I know talking to one of my colleagues on the CIE team who owns, you know, Azure tables and Azure queue storage in general, they do see performance problems in that, but I don't think people see the performance issues that we see when we're doing page blobs for VMs.
Yeah, that's something I don't hear a lot of noise about. Like, that's the least of things that people complain about, as far as like performance things on Azure. It's not my experience that people are complaining about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're putting stuff in there, you're still going to push it, but you could, I guess theoretically, you just split it out in multiple tables. It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's kind of built into that.
Definitely with the tables, the design is pretty important, just like NoSQL, you know, to get your indexing right, but just like any database.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. I know the other thing that I was trying to get my head wrapped around was, you know, if you go back and look at your, so we talk about IOPS limits just like we do with standard disks, but we actually, that's at the disk level, right? But we also have the storage account level.
Mm-hmm.
In standard storage, it's 20,000 transactions or 20,000 IOPS per second, I think it is. In the, premium storage, we actually talk about 50 gigabits per second.
Jeez.
So it's a bandwidth more than an operations thing. And I don't quite know how to do the conversion for those. Right. How do I know how many, I don't think an IOP I guess we have to count it differently. Right. So you look at the amount of data that we're transferring, not just the number of operations.
I guess that's a good point too. I know internally we do some stuff, but I just wondered, maybe people were wondering, well, I'm not sure if this is, you know, sounds great that it's faster performance, but, can I kind of prove some of that stuff out and kind of benchmark it? Have you had experience with people using any tools like that to kind of benchmark the storage?
I think they're just starting to do that. It just came public preview a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And I know the couple of folks that I've heard of that have started to doing it, you know, their first pass is, well, yeah, it's SSD versus, you know, Azure standard storage. The comparison is really like non-existent, yep. Right? The question really becomes, is it worth the, move? Right? Mm-hmm. Do they actually need the IOPS? I haven't heard anybody that really has gone through and said, you know, what can I really push the system to do before I start seeing trouble or what's the behavior like when I start exceeding these numbers?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I don't know. I mean, I was never a super, super deep, like, IO guy from a SQL Server perspective, but 50,000 IOPS just seems like a lot. I mean, you got to really be pushing some serious data to be able to do that, to the point that I would have to wonder if today, if we have virtual machines that can really stress that level,
mm-hmm.
Right? Do we have enough cores? Do we have enough RAM? I mean, I guess you could certainly push it that way, but I'd be hard pressed to come up with an application architecture off the top of my head that would really need that much
mm-hmm.
stuff. So
I guess the other question I have, being from the support side, Evan, the throttling part, right? So if somebody does hammer it really hard, have you seen that in the past? Like somebody actually hit that limit? And I would imagine it's, you know, they just start getting, you know, either delayed responses or, you know, dropped.
It's, you won't, so it depends on where you're hitting it through. 'Cause we've definitely seen people do it. And that's kind of where we've come up with some of the best practices on how to use storage spaces with the disks.
Mm-hmm.
But the behavior that, again, I haven't tried this to provision IO, but I don't expect it to be any different, is that it's kind of a mix of how Windows handles it and how Azure Storage handles it. So Azure Storage will preserve your request, but it'll just delay it, mm-hmm. right? So you end up with this kind of progressively larger queue if you never back off on your load, right? Mm-hmm. And your queue gets longer and longer. The problem becomes, and I don't remember the exact number, I want to say 2 minutes, but don't quote me on the exact number, but after, say, 2 minutes, Windows says, I tried to write this I.O., and it didn't happen, so I'm just going to give up on it.
Yeah, and I can imagine if that's something like SQL Server, it's probably bad news.
Yeah, SQL Server is really good because it does. That's part of why they do the transaction log database file mix, right? Because your tran log is a super small piece of data you write comparatively, and then your data file is much larger. But we've certainly seen cases where we had a case one day for a customer where they were resizing their disk and they happened to resize it while they were hammering their storage account. And the net result is that they got throttled right mm-hmm. as the resize was happening. And so some of the rights associated with extending the MFT, right? So the file table
mm-hmm.
Actually got lost.
Oh, geez.
And so the disk was no good at that point. Now it was kind of good, bad from an academic perspective. I mean, from a customer perspective, I mean, definitely very painful. I really felt for the customer. I mean, from an academic and a technical perspective, we were able to actually go in and look at the storage tables, look at the application logs, and kind of paint the whole picture and say, hey, here's exactly what happened and when it happened.
Mm-hmm.
So we could kind of explain it, but yeah, it was pretty painful, because they did lose those disks, and the guy that was working with them knows how to recover these disks. Like, he knows how to rebuild an MFT, which is a mystery to me.
Is his name Gandalf? I mean,
he's funny because, we actually had him on this. I think it was the week you and Sajid were gone, but he did the Windows Azure. We interviewed him for Windows Azure Backup. And, he's apparently like one of the four guys in Microsoft, even including the product group, who, if you hand them a disk that, and you just say, this thing is just junk, right? They can actually like read bit by bit the state of the disk to try and rebuild the MFT.
Wow.
Yeah. So occasionally when people get their disks like trashed by malware or stuff like that, that we don't guarantee we can do it, but of the people that can know how to do it, he's like one of just a handful. He was like, yeah, I can't recover this. But it was kind of a one-off where you had to have two things happening at the same time. It looks like provisioned IO is going to be, or I'm sorry, provisioned storage, premium storage. Sorry, let me get my terms right. I knew there was a PR in there. The premium storage is going to have the same behavior, right? Cool. From a throttling perspective, if you hit it, you're going to be, you're going to see your actual operations backed off, right? So, but again, man, if you can manage that 50K, I'm pretty impressed. Right, I mean, I'd like to try and stress it and just see if I can do it, but I don't know how to do it. So,
cool.
But yeah, so it looks pretty exciting, right? I mean, it's definitely a big sea change, but we'll see what people end up doing. I'm sure that our customers, being what they are, they will figure out ways to use it that we have not thought of that don't work so well. But it'll make the product better in the long run.
So same. I would assume that the same recommendations for, like, you know, there's kind of a guide, I think, out there for things like SQL, like if you're running SQL Server on VMs
yep.
or IaaS VMs, about how you set up disk caching and all the little tweaks you can do in there to kind of squeeze the performance out. I assume all that stuff still applies. Is there any gotcha there or pretty much the same?
Yeah, I would see that as pretty much the same. And again, some of that's going to be that was what Will and I were talking about today is, okay, so how is this going to change? You know, some of our recommendations, should it in general. His kind of initial stance was, you know, not really, with the exception of maybe the storage spaces piece, because it may just become unnecessary. But in general, all the caching stuff and everything else that we recommend, there's really no reason to change it.
Cool.
So actually, I'll put a link. He wrote a really good script while we're on this. This isn't really a premium storage thing, but he wrote a script that actually goes through and checks your VM against our best practices. And then the other way you can run it is to go create a VM with those best practices, just because we kept having some people just run into trouble with it. And it's hard to tell after the fact sometimes, right? How many columns do you have in your storage space is not always super easy to go figure out. I don't know. It'd be really interesting to see. I kind of would really like to see somebody start moving here and actually run into some trouble. Not that I want them to have problems, but I mean, it'd be kind of interesting to see, okay, what actual problems do they run into, right? Is it, you know, something at the OS level? Is it, you know, at the storage level? I mean, what really goes wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, but I don't know. It'll be interesting. So I actually probably have to go get my account turned on for it. I haven't done that yet. How long did it take for yours to get enabled?
It's typical stuff, like a day. Just like a day or two. It wasn't that long.
Okay. Yeah, I should probably put the request in at some point before I forget. So. Okay. Well, I mean, I don't have any other real big areas on that unless you have any other things you want to hit on.
No, it's really new. I haven't even used it that much. I have it provisioned on my account and I took a quick look at it, but I haven't used it too much and I don't have any customers using it, so
yeah.
Not a lot of feedback yet.
Yeah. Well, you know, a week, right? I mean, that's like an eternity in cloud world, but people still have to use it, so. Okay, well, cool. Well, let's move on to our other topic. This has got to be right up your line as a developer thing, but the changing the storage APIs.
Yeah, so I guess we released a change, and I believe we released a change a little while back, like back in August. But now these things come to fruition a little bit more. There's like a staging process, right? And it goes through like deprecation, and actually when you get into breaking changes. And usually that's, you know, when you're writing code or like if you're doing web services, usually that's the way we go through this, which Azure Storage is a service, right? It's a web service. But typically the standard practice there for those services is if you want to get rid of something, some functionality or modify it in such a way that it would break existing people, then that's where the versioning comes in, right? So we have like versioning on all our services up there. And there's this whole thing about, you know, you have like default versions, so that, you know, if you don't pass a version, you just get generally available. And then, you know, so then you could play with it though. So you could like pull yourself back into, you know, older ones and let them run for a while. And then over time, what happens is we would deprecate one, go through a cycle, and then eventually remove it or make the default different now. And at that point, that's usually where the breaks happen, right? Because customers are forget
you,
or.
Yeah. Oh, you mean I was supposed to make that change this week? Oh, yeah.
Whoops. Yeah.
Yeah. I know we actually, I mean, I'm sure that my buddies on the team that supports these APIs, I'm sure they've had high severity cases where, you know, somebody finally, you know, we finally removed a specific version or a specific variant. And they just never updated their code.
Yep.
So, I mean, do you know, I gotta assume this is just around the fact that you can't keep all the old releases forever, because it just ends up being too tough to maintain them. But do you know of anything off the top of your head that we're picking up that's super beneficial here? Or, I mean, is there, you know, some?
I don't know this that deep enough to know what changed, but typically when it's a break like this, like the parameters have changed for one of our API calls, one of the REST APIs, so something's not optional. Usually if you can get away with that, like if you could just add another parameter to the function, and make it optional, then there's no break. But the problem is sometimes when there are bug fixes or something else. So typically it's something like that, because that's the interface point where people are writing code to. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I guess at some point you just can't keep it, right?
Yeah.
Some piece of functionality. I'm looking back at, actually, you know, it's kind of interesting when I look at this, I did not realize we had, this many different SDKs or libraries for this.
Yeah, yeah. So I think what's funny is we were talking earlier before we started, but I remember, like, everything was going pretty smooth until about 1.7, I think it was, of the storage client. And here's another important point. The storage client version number doesn't always match whatever the Azure SDK is. Right, so the Azure SDK, I think, is on 2.5 right now.
Yep.
And this thing, I don't know what this one is right now, but the storage used to be behind. So it was at like 2.4. We were running a 2.0 version of the storage client. So those things don't marry up exactly. And I remember the last time we had one of these breaking changes, it was when we went from like 1.7 to 2, and now this one's coming from 2 to something else. I don't know what the new one is, but so just one of those things.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, it's I always kind of laugh. I mean, usually it bites at the worst times, but, you know, customers that, you know, we'll set up a machine and then just kind of, okay, if I don't ever touch it, nothing will ever break.
Yeah.
You know, but there's always, you know, Windows gets updates and other applications get updates, especially the auto update stuff now. And then over time, right, something just doesn't go together. So I guess the moral of the story here, right, is we announced it in August. It's now coming up on 2015. We announced it in August 2014 that we were going to do this in, I want to say August of 2015. On August 1st of 2015. So now you're less than, you know, coming up on less than 8 months away, right? So this is now probably as you're doing your planning for calendar year 2015 and your development work, this is probably the right time to be thinking about that, right? Because you don't want to be running around trying to, you know, push out your code to get it work, because I don't know. I mean, something like this does not feel like the kind of thing that the average, even big, super big customers could go in and say, please, 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 can I have 3 more weeks of this API? I mean, this just feels like, hey, August 1st, okay, it's gone. It's just not there. Right?
And to Azure's credit, I mean, I've been getting tons of emails about this. So as long as your admin accounts, it's a good thing every now and then to check those, but make sure that your information's all correct up there, because those announcements will come through. And I believe it even comes through in the portal now. I don't know about how it comes through on the preview portal, but the existing portal, I get those messages all the time at the bottom when Azure wants to tell me something.
The little toast, right, at that point.
Yep. Yeah.
And now you're coming in, but you're coming in as an admin account, right? Or an admin over your own subscription.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that does raise an interesting thing that I think if you're a developer who's not the admin, you probably ought to reach out to your admin periodically and just say, hey, are you getting any of these emails that I probably ought to know about?
Yep.
Right? Or you know, get them to tell you about some of the toasts at that point. So, yeah, now the other thing that I know there was an internal thread on this, it looks like you're still going to be able to use the unversioned variant, right? So if you kind of want to use your bare bones functionality,
yep.
I guess the unversioned just says I'm always going to use the latest, I guess.
It's like the default? Is that what you're, I think that's what
yeah,
you're
saying? I would assume so.
Yep.
Okay. So, I mean, I guess that's kind of the ultimate in
Well, I don't know if that's – so there's the default, right, which Azure – like, so if you don't pass something explicit, if you're not explicit and said use this version, we – so I think at this point right now we're still running with the old one, so we didn't break anything right now. So if nobody – let's say somebody wrote an app and they didn't explicitly pass what version of API they want for the blob service, they could continue to work. Nothing's going to break until, was it August 2015? At that point, the default will switch to the other one. And at that point, a massive break would happen in your app potentially if they were using one of those functions.
Oh, so, okay. So we're not, okay. So the unversioned is not kind of a bare bones. Unversioned basically says you're getting the latest, which may or may not work with your
correct
upcoming code. Okay. But you're not, if you're kind of testing as you go, you're not going to get broken on that day if you know that the new functionality is not going to break you.
Yeah. And the way to test it, it's pretty easy, right? So all you have to do is explicitly, obviously it's easy for me to say, but if somebody has some code, you just have to change and pass that parameter if you want to start testing it early. Right, like even right now, you could be testing it running on the new one.
Yeah.
And then after it cuts over, if you wanted to pull it back to the default, great. It's kind of a nice thing to pass it explicitly, because then you know if something's going to break, and because we keep them around. Even after this thing changes from default, it'll be there for a while, so it takes a long time for these things to get totally removed.
I guess this would be prime example of if you have your code factored the right way.
Yep.
And if you have the right unit test, you should be able to just go and rev the version in your unit tests, but not your production code.
Yep.
See what breaks, and then just start, fixing things from there.
Yep.
But we all know our code is all perfectly factored and easy to do that, right?
There's this thing called time, and people care about money for some reason. I don't know why.
It's funny. I was just – I think we've talked about this before, although I've mostly deprecated it because I personally have moved on to a Microsoft band. But my Fitbit app, I decided I would do over the weekend. I'd kind of just put one last push all the little bugs that I had that I fixed over the last, 6 months that I have the fixes for, but the rest of my users don't. So kind of bad. I finally decided to push it all out, and it didn't work. I built it. I mean, this code hasn't changed in forever except for tiny little tweaks here or there. And I pushed it out, and it just flat out didn't work. Well, it turns out that I had one spot in my code where I wasn't properly factoring out the URL that I was building. Mm. And Fitbit, they changed their API sometime in November to basically require HTTPS. And that one line of code where I wasn't factoring it properly, I actually had an HTTP.
Mm.
So it actually broke the registration process. So you couldn't even get your data, even if you were, but only affected new customers at that point or new users. But it'll come back to bite you at the worst times. Right? Here I thought, hey, it's just a 10-minute operation to just push out the last of my stuff. 2 hours later, I was kind of pulling what little hair I have out.
Nice.
So, yeah, it does come back to haunt you. So, okay, so moral of the story, refactor your code right and then start getting ahead of these API changes. Awesome. I think that's it for this week. At this point, we hit I keep wanting to say provision storage, premium storage. God, I'm going to have to say that 100 times to think. But we hit premium storage, and then we hit the storage API changes, and everybody should keep their eye out for that stuff.
Awesome.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Cale.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle, @AzurePodcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.